This is kind of home. So actually, I lived, you see right here is Mount Etna. Right here is Mount Etna. So we lived on the south side of Mount Etna for 3 years. I guess we lived there from 91 to 94, on the south side of Mount Etna. And then from 88 to 91, we lived in La Maddalena, which is about right here, just off the map here. And it's an island. Actually, there's two big islands right over here. There's Corsica. Corsica's like, I wish it was, it's all right. Anyway, I don't know. Anyway, there's Corsica and there's Sardinia. Sardinia is an Italian island, and Corsica is a French island. I don't know what they were back in Rome. I think they probably both belonged to Rome back then. But anyway, we lived like right here between 88 and 91. And that was on a ship, so we sailed a lot. Well, actually we didn't. We didn't. It was a repair ship, so we didn't sail a lot, but when we did, we sailed around over a year or so. Yeah, it was kind of different. My ship was a repair ship, and it was built for the South Pacific during World War II. So it had an open bridge, which is kind of bizarre. It had two bridges. It had like an inside bridge where like they controlled the ship. Then it had an open bridge where like the captain and I guess CO could sit out on this nice patio-like place under this canopy. And that's where the watches were and stuff. And it was very nice. That's where I got to be. I was just a messenger. I was just a messenger up there. But I got to be on the bridge. So that was cool. And on this open bridge, and it was nice. And so we got to sail around and stuff. And then in Sicily, there was Naval Air Station Sigonella is in Sicily, and it's a hopping base. Let me tell you, compared to Fort Pope Field, over on Fort Bragg, Sigonella is like at least 10 times busier, if not 100 times busier. I mean, there's just as you can imagine, it's right in the middle of the Mediterranean, and it's just things moving all the time. Unbelievable. And I didn't realize at the time, but I mean, it's just moving. But anyway, I guess that's getting off track, isn't it? But to me, I just kind of relate to this. Sorry, getting off track here. Let's see. So scripture. So Luke, this lesson's on scripture. Okay, sanctify your hearts, and always be ready to give a defense to everyone who asks you for the reason of the hope that is in you with meekness and fear. 1 Peter 3:15. So the idea of defense, the idea of apologetics is the idea of being able to give a defense for our belief. Genesis 3:10. Okay, Luke's former account. So Luke, he wrote Luke, and Luke wrote Acts. So the former account is Luke. Inasmuch as many have taken in hand to set in order a narrative of those things which have been fulfilled among us, just as those things from the beginning were eyewitnesses and ministers of the word delivered to us, it seemed good to me also, having a perfect understanding of all things from the first, to write to you an orderly account, most excellent Theophilus, that you may know the certainty of these things in which you were instructed. Luke 1 to 4. The former account I made, O Philophus, was of all the thing that Jesus both began to do and teach until the day which he was taken up, and after he through the Holy Spirit had given commandments to whom he had chosen, to whom he also presented himself alive, his suffering by many infallible proofs, being seen by them during the 40 days and speaking the things pertaining to the kingdom of God. Ideas presented, an apologetic term used 13 times in Acts. Then Peter gave her Dorcas his hand and lifted her up. And when he had called the saints and widows, he presented her alive. And proofs, also translated infallible proofs, New King James, or convincing proofs, NIV. And I guess I have to say here, you know, actually Luke, many of the things Luke wrote, he wasn't a first-hand witness, right? So I find it kind of odd that they chose Luke, but you know, some things he was. You know, there's we accounts in the book of Acts, but probably 80% of the things he wrote, he wasn't a firsthand witness of. So, I mean, to me we have better. We have Matthew and John. Their first account, you can read them today. And those are first account. Those are written by the eyewitness. So you can read today. Matthew and John. You can read first account witness. You know, we don't have to even go to, you know, second account witness like Luke. We have better. We have Matthew and we have John. First account witness of the life of Christ, the death, the burial, and the resurrection account. First account witnesses. I just throw that in there. I just have to. I mean, we have first account witnesses. Why are we worrying about second account witnesses here?
But they're all inspired.
Yeah, they're all inspired by God. No doubt about it. But we have first account witnesses. Would be allowed in court. I mean, first account. I mean, no question. Okay, he was seen by Cephas, then by the 12, and after that he was seen by over 500 brethren at once, and that he was seen by James, and then by the apostles. Then last of all, he was seen also by me. 1 Corinthians 15:5-8. Yes, and also we have Paul. He's a first account witness, right? He saw Christ on the road to Damascus, you know, in a rather dramatic way. he was also a first I can't win this. So we have okay. Behold my hands and my feet, that it is I myself. Handle me and see, for a spirit does not have flesh and bones as you see I have. Luke 24:39. He said to them, have you any food? So they gave him a piece of boiled fish and some honeycomb, and he took it and he ate it in their presence. So, I mean, to me, that's, you know, you can't fake that, right? I mean, it's like, so it's not a hologram, right? Holograms don't really eat. You know, it's not, you know, it's not just a, you know, another something. The amazing, the accuracy of the book of Acts. In Acts, and to me, this is amazing, you know, because, you know, you think, you know, you look at the page here, right? Okay, this is only half the Mediterranean, and it looks small, right? But this is really 1,000 miles, you know, from Sicily to Israel is 1,000 miles, and from Sicily to Spain is 1,000 miles. So it's 2,000 miles across the Mediterranean region. That whole region is. You know, and to get all that, you know, and it was in total flux all the time, right? I mean, total political, you know, things changing names. I mean, this whole time things were going from Greek to Roman or to whatever. You know, they had, like, you know, all these names. You had a local name, then you had the Greek name, then you had the Roman name. I mean, you had all this political stuff going on. And in Acts, Luke mentions 32 countries, 54 cities, and 9 Mediterranean islands. He also mentions 95 persons, 62 which are not named elsewhere in the New Testament, and his references were checkable, are always correct. This is truly remarkable in view of the fact that the political territorial situation of the day was in a state of almost constant change. Only inspiration can account for Luke's precision. Luke's use of nautical terms. Luke's narrative of the voyage and shipwreck of Paul on his way to Italy is a small classic in its own right, as graphic as a piece of descriptive writing as anything in the Bible. It bears a clear evidence of being the account of an eyewitness who viewed the sea through Greek eyes. Luke's account of the voyage to Rome is considered a masterpiece, the best record of an extended ancient voyage, which throws more light on seafaring matters of that time than any other description. The account of the voyage is so true to ancient seagoing practices that James Smith, the Scottish yachtsman and classical scholar from the last century, spent years in study of this narrative, including his personal experience at the sites mentioned in the text. His conclusion that the report was written by someone who had actually observed the techniques used in a voyage on a Roman vessel during a real journey on the Mediterranean Sea. Luke furnishes more information of ancient navigation in chapters 27 and 28 than any single document of antiquity. And specific nautical terms used by Luke: anchor, mainsail, helps, cables, ropes, rudder, vessel, ship, and skiff. Not to, that skiff word's used different today. If you hear that word today, it's probably means something different than it was back then in a small boat type. Now if you hear it, something totally different, usually. Set sail, head into the wind, unload cargo, took soundings, driven about up and down in fathoms, all these terms. Master, helmsman, captain, owner of the ship, the sailors, northeaster, tempest, headwind. Let's see, this James Smith, he was an authority on ancient shipbuilding and navigation. Under Mr. every sentence of the narrative falls into its proper place. There's positively no unexplained difficulty. I do not assume the authenticity of the voyage and shipwreck, but scrutinize St. Luke's account of the voyage precisely as I would any voyage of doubtful authority. A searching comparison of the narrative and localities where the events are said to have taken place account for every transaction, clears up every difficulty and exhibits an agreement so perfect that all its parts as to admit but one explanation. That is a narrative of a real events written by one personality engaged in them, and that the tradition respecting locality is true. He says, Luke's style, though accurate, is unprofessional. No sailor would have written in a style so little like that of a sailor. No man, not a sailor, could have written a narrative of a sea voyage so consistent in all its parts unless them actual observation. So it kind of makes the point of this guy wasn't really a sailor, but he wasn't like a farmer either, right? He had to be like an actual witness. I mean, had to be something else. This particular of the style to me in itself, a demonstration of the narrative of the voyage, an account of real events written by an eyewitness. A similar remark is made of the geographical details that must have been taken from actual observation for geographical knowledge of the age and not such as to enable a writer to be so minutely accurate in any other way. Okay, landsman. Okay, so it makes a point of just that the guy wasn't a seaman. He wasn't really a farmer. He tells us what has happened, but rarely tells how or why. In doing so, he often mentions circumstances which a seaman would think, noticing their familiarity, is frequently silent, and those which are the greatest importance not to seamen would pass over. These are exactly the particularities that characterize St. Luke as a voyage writer. Comparing Luke to other voyage writer. Smith compares the course taken by Luke and similar courses taken by more modern sailors with remarkable similarities in wind and weather patterns, as well as location of key sites, ports, cities along the way. He also notices the accuracy of Luke's account as compared with confused or blundering accounts of other voyage writers who took the same course. Okay, now he brings up this term polytarch. holly tark. But when they did not find them, they dragged Jason and some of the brethren to the rulers of the city, Polytarchus, crying out, these have turned the world upside down, have come here too. It says the word occurs only in Acts 17, 6 and 8, and appears nowhere in the New Testament and nowhere else in the Greek literature, as an official title. But there's other terms. It's kind of strange that he used this term, you know, because he could use a magistrate or authority. And so, did Luke make a mistake? In 1960, this guy found 32 inscriptions bearing the term. This term, approximately 19, came from Thessalonica, and at least three of them dated back to the first century. So that inscription dated 30 BC to 143. So apparently this term is a real term in that area. So it was no mistake that he used the correct term used in that area. So it's kind of like, you know, in the U.S. we call, you know, and I guess in 48 states we call counties, right? But in two states we don't call them counties. And in Louisiana we call them parishes. In Alaska we call them something else. I can't remember. But you know, so you'd think, you know, why don't we not call them counties? You know, well.
Pennsylvania call them boroughs, don't they? Boroughs.
Is it? Yeah, but I mean, I think there's a, yeah. Yeah, I think in some, but most places you call them counties, right? But not everywhere. It's the same sort of thing here. Most places you call them a magistrate or a, you know, but in this particular area, you would call them a politarch. Luke's accurate topographical reference. Even when a writer was an eyewitness, as Luke was, all of the records, if his narrative requires them to enter largely into local details, it was almost impossible for him to avoid some errors. And more numerous and minute details and greater the liability of error. The accuracy of a historian is more thoroughly tested, by the minuter matters of geography, such as the relative levels of different portions of the country. In these, the Bible writers are more unfailingly accurate as in the more general features. Two examples. And when he, Paul, had landed in Caesarea and gone up and greeted the church at Jerusalem, he went down to Antioch. When the brethren found out, they brought him, Paul, down to Caesarea and sent him out to Tarsus. And they have the general elevations. And one thing about this, in the Bible, I guess I got to quibble with this a bit. In the Bible, you always went up to Jerusalem. Didn't matter about elevation. That's the way the Jews spoke. You always went up to Jerusalem. Didn't matter about elevation. You know, usually, just out of respect, you know, you always went up to. But in this here, okay, he's trying to make a point, but in the Bible, you know, just keep that in mind. In the Bible, you know, a lot of places, just out of deference, you always go up, and then, of course, you go down to anywhere else, irregardless of elevation. But anyway, here we go. That's our point. And not a single instance of this kind has any Bible writers been found at fault. Do you trust the Bible? Do you read, study the Bible? Okay. Group reflection questions. Okay, so this is the end. Okay, so that's the end. And it's 9:49. I got 15 minutes. It's okay. Actually, I kind of wanted to get through this. Okay. Okay, because I really kind of wanted to bring up some stuff. Okay. So, Malta. Okay. Okay, so, just bring up some random stuff here that I always found kind of interesting. Okay. Okay, so, okay. So our house was here on Mount Etna, south side of Mount Etna, and you could actually see the sea, right? You could actually see this. I don't know if you can really see it here, but this little curve in the seashore here, north of Syracuse, you could actually see this little curve in the shoreline from our house, which is cool. That's cool. You know, think that you can almost see Syracuse from our house. But not quite, because it is quite a ways further down there. But anyway, but you know, Paul, you know, Apostle Paul, he sailed from Syracuse. Okay, he sailed from Syracuse up to Syracuse. English names for Italian cities drive me insane, but whatever. But Syracuse is fine. But Regium drives me insane. But anyway, yes, some English names drive me insane for Italian cities. Regium is one of them. They call Reggio, they call it Regium, and then they call the worst one of all, they call Laverno. In English, they call it Leghorn, like the chicken. Right? Why do you call Laverno Leghorn? I don't know. Anyway, let's see. Okay, so I'll read in Acts 28, verse 12, it says, after we put into Syracuse, we stayed there for 3 days. From there, we sailed around and arrived in Regium, and a day later, a south wind sprang up, and the second day, we came to Puteoli. Well, this is another one. It says Puteoli. Puteoli, okay, come on. Okay, Puteoli, whatever. There we found some brethren, and we were invited to stay with them for 7 days, and thus we came to Rome. Okay, so they're in Syracuse, okay, and so it says they sailed around, okay, here. And if you read different verses, some versions say a circle route, you know. And, you know, and me, I was thinking, well, why would you do a circle route between Syracuse and Reggio? I call it Reggio. Okay. Why would you do a circle route between Syracuse and Reggio? Any ideas? Why would you do a circle route? Why would the Bible mention you do a circle route between the two? Actually, there's a guy at PTP. He did a lesson on these same chapters here, and he had a different idea than me. Okay, my idea. Okay, you have Mount Etna here, right? It doesn't mention it, but my idea before I listened to this guy from PTP is you have Mount Etna sitting right here. You know, it's sitting there, and you have, it's now 11,000 feet tall. When we lived there, it was 10,000 something, but it just went over 11,000 11,000 feet, and that's going from sea level. That's sitting at sea level up to 11,000 feet. So it's a massive mountain because, you know, it's not like the Rockies. They go from 5,000 up to 14. You know, we're talking about going from 0 to 10, well, actually now 11, 0 to 11. Massive mountain. Any way you look at it, I think it's one of the, I think it's in like one way to, I think it's in like the top 50 in the way that they measure massiveness of mountains. It's not the tallest, but I think it's up there in what they call, how they measure the size of a mountain and height compared to the surroundings. Anyway, but, you know, because, you know, some mountains just, you know, you think, wow, it's 14,000, but, you know, the mountain next to it's sitting over here at, you know, 10,000 or 12,000, so, you know, it's not quite as impressive. But, you know, this is sitting here, you know, it's 11,000, and probably the mountain, tallest mountain next to it might be 3,000, right? You know, these mountains heading up this way, maybe the mountain next to it's 3,000 at the most. You know, so it's just massive. It just, you know, so my idea was, you know, maybe they did a circle route to kind of stay away from Mount Etna to get up here, okay, to go through, you know, the straits, okay, and then on the way up. So maybe they did, maybe that's why they did the circle route. But with this guy, he said it's probably more, and I think he's right, the reason they did a circle route probably wasn't literally a circle route, is that they probably had problems up here at the Straits of Messina getting through here. And the reason that he's, and I think this regio is really on the north side here. This is kind of, I think this map is wrong. I think this regio is, I think it's really on the, I think it's on the north side of the Straits. But anyway, I think the idea was they went in a circle route because they're kind of struggling to get through the straits, so they kind of went in circles until they could finally get through the straits. So it makes more sense, because the wind would be coming. The wind always blows east-west through here, always, like 99. I've only seen a north-south wind one time. The whole time I lived in Sicily 3 years. I only saw a north-south wind one time, and it, you know, it totally blew trash all over the place because there was no, you know, because the trash was kind of blowing in areas that it kind of settled in places going east-west, right? So when the wind came up from the south, it just started blowing trash everywhere because, you know, it hadn't settled that way. So it's kind of bizarre, but anyway. So this and actually there's two airports right here just south of the mountain. There's Naval Air Station and a commercial Fontana Rosa, and they both only have east-west runways because the wind always blows east-west. So, you know, there'd been no problem sailing up here. I guess the point is, there'd been no problem sailing up here because the wind is always east-west, you know, at least through here. But the treacherous, the Straits of Messina are very narrow. At one point, they actually have highline wires going across, so that narrow. So that they do get very narrow.
I've never been there, but is it like big rocks out in the water and that type of thing?
I don't remember rocks in the water. I mean, but it is narrow.
What about coral or reefs?
There's probably places that you would, yeah. Of course, they have pilots. You know, they have pilots to guide you. Always, one thing. Anytime you get near anything like this, if you get, you're going to have a pilot. A pilot's going to come on board. I don't know if you've ever seen them. But if a ship is sailing into port or through a dangerous area, they'll have like a little boat will come out, and this guy will, come aboard, and he will be like the pilot, and he will be like the special guy that knows that area very well, and he'll guide the ship through, through the dangerous area. And and usually it's into port and out of port, but the Straits of Messina would be another area, right, where you're going to have a pilot that's going to come out, and he's going to just be on board just to go through the straits. Does that make sense? Yeah, he's going to. Yeah, so it's going to be no problem. Like today, no problem, right? No problem today. You're under power. You're going to have a pilot. You're going to get through there, no problem. But back in the day, you don't have a pilot and you have sails, right? You're at mercy of the wind and, whatever, yeah, it's going to be a rough go. So I think he's probably right. It probably has nothing to do with Mount Etna. It probably had to do with, trying to get a good wind to, get up through the Straits of Messina. Anyway, I guess one adventure I had was, I guess you've always heard, the trip Paul made from this area to the Cyprus. I can see where so he went by this area. Well, we had one trip, we were supposed to just go to Naples, right? So we went over to Naples, and then they hung this Colonel Higgins. I don't remember if you remember. They hung Colonel Higgins in Lebanon. But anyway, so they kind of sent the whole fleet over to Lebanon area. Anyway, so we kind of did the Paul thing in reverse, except for Malta. We kind of skipped Malta, but we went to Sigonella, went down near here. We kind of went from over here down here. Then we went to Crete. Then we went to Cyprus. And then we went to Israel. So we kind of did Paul's journey in reverse. I kind of figured this out. I've just kind of heard this before, Kind of heard this trip before. But it was kind of cool to kind of do his trip in reverse, except for Malta. Now I do have a story about Malta. Okay. One time we went up to the ski lodge on, not to go skiing, but went up to the ski lodge on Mount Etna, and the day was just crystal clear. There's kind of two things that kind of hinder you from seeing long distances, right? There's altitude and haze, right? And usually if one don't get you, the other will, right? But usually, altitude, the curvature of the earth just chops things off, right? And the other thing is just haze, right? You may have a clear shot, clear line of shot, but then the haze just gets to you. You just can't see. Well, one day, went up here, and you could see all the outline of Sicily. Just perfect. You could see the end, you could just see the corner from the top of the mountain. We weren't even at the top, but you could just see the corner of Sicily just clear as a bell. And I could see this land in the distance. I'm thinking, that can't be Africa, right? I'm thinking I could see this land in the distance. I'm like, that cannot be Africa. That cannot be Libya. You know, so I went and, you know, looked at the map, and sure enough, it was Malta. So I could see Malta from Mount Etna, which was kind of unbelievable, but it was just that clear on that day. You could see Malta from Mount Etna. And it was just one of those days. Because there's days like, you know, where we lived in Sardinia. Some days you could just, a couple days, you could just see the mountains on Corsica. I mean, it looked like the Alps on a clear day. Perfectly clear day. Mostly it was just haze, but on a perfectly clear day, Corsica just looked like the Alps. You could just see these snow-capped mountains from Corsica. You know, these French mountains, just beautiful, just unbelievable. A lot of 99% of the time you can't see them, right? Just that crystal clear day where there's no haze. You can just see forever. It's one of those things. Anyway.
All right, so we'll start back up at 10:10 in 10 minutes.
Or 5 minutes.